the Battleground State Report with Steve Gill, Michael Patrick Leahy, and Doug Kellett.
Hey, welcome in. This is the Battleground State Report. Go to battlegroundstatenews.com on the web. That's battlegroundstatenews.com, where you'll find links to some of the stories that we're talking about. The weekend news as we roll in is the left trying to say, oh, the economy is slowed. Trump's economy is dying on the vine because the jobs report for February showed just 20,000 new jobs added in February. First of all, February is a short month. Not to be heightist or anything like that. It's just a shorter month
in
terms of number of days.
Says the 6'4 Gill.
But also, you had these massive snowstorms. You had these blizzards. Again, you're also having people trying to figure out what's going to happen with the economy as Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats start talking their socialism. So, yeah, you do have some retrenching among businesses saying, okay, let's wait and see where this goes before we add more expenditure, make more investment, add more people. And then finally, when you get states and communities raising the minimum wage to 15, you're seeing more and more companies saying, hey, let's automate. Okay, if we're going to have to pay people more, we're going to have to hire them less hours to be able to make a living. You're seeing more companies forced into automation rather than hiring people because the Democrats have started putting their socialist agenda in place. So I'm not surprised at this jobs report at all. I think you're going to continue to see the economy grow and thrive, but it's a harder uphill slog when you're having to carry the weight of liberal socialism on your shoulders.
Exactly. And as we talk to our audience every weekend here at the Battleground State Report, we are focused on what's going on in those 17 states that will really make a difference in the 2020 presidential election. There are 13 states, California, New York, or Washington, that are going to be blue. They'll vote for the Democratic nominee, no matter who that is. And there are 20 states that are red states that are going to vote for the Republican nominee, President Trump, almost certainly. And but there are 17 states that are toss-up states to one degree or another. And those Electoral College votes will determine who the next president will be in 2020. Will President Trump be reelected, or will a Democrat be the next president? Those states are in the Midwest: Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, Iowa, Missouri, Indiana, and Minnesota. In New England, it's Maine and New Hampshire. In the West, it's Nevada, Arizona, New Mexico, and Colorado. And in the South, it's Virginia, North Carolina, and Florida. And we focus on local issues in those states because there are national issues like, you know, overall unemployment. Each state has different unemployment rates and different economic growth. But as former Democrat Speaker of the House, Tip O'Neill, said, all politics is local.
You know, and it's interesting because we're not the only ones watching the state-by-state battleground state impact on the presidential election, Senate elections, and those. Ohio has now been dropped from a Democratic super PAC's list of target states in 2020 as they're seeing the Democratic Party move to the left. They're looking at how do they cater to socialists in other states that may be a higher priority for them than others. The top Democrat super PAC spent $133 million in support of Hillary Clinton in 2016. It now says it no longer considers Ohio a target state for the 2020 presidential election. In their memo, Priorities USA —
that's a George Soros operation, I think.
Yeah. Supported President Obama in 2012 re-election campaign, Hillary's 2016 run for White House. They downgraded Ohio's importance and labeled the state a GOP watch, along with Texas and Iowa. Iowa would be another one that the Democrats regularly compete in. Texas, I'm not seeing that, but they think that because of Beto.
Beto got how, within 3 points of Ted Cruz with like $80 million bucks behind him.
Yeah, spending a lot of money to get that close. They can't do that in a presidential race no matter how much. They can't spend their whole $130 million in Texas. The PAC now sees Ohio as less likely to flip than other swing states. They're focusing their attention on Florida, which I think will be a reach for them, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, which I think will be a reach for them.
North Carolina's a reach.
Georgia and Arizona. Now, no math question for you, Doug, but do you think they're right to move away from Ohio and look to maybe a Georgia and an Arizona as states they can flip into the blue column versus trying to get Ohio back into the blue column?
Well, I think they're definitely right about Ohio. And then, we saw this week that Senator Brown is not going to run, right? I mean,
the Democrat from Ohio, yeah,
right, Brown. Exactly. There was a lot of thought he would jump in the race, so that may be indicative of the way things are going.
Let's
in Ohio,
go on
perhaps.
That, Doug, yeah. just for a moment, yeah. And get on to your point though. So he actually is, although he's very liberal, compared to the rest of the field. he's like not totally a socialist, communist, Marxist yet. So, and he figured he couldn't win the nomination.
He's got time to grow in that position, perhaps.
He'll still stand for the anthem when there are TV cameras on him, but, otherwise maybe not so much.
But he might be one of these guys that decides he can be sort of the match, the kingmaker or whatever, because Ohio will be important, obviously, in a presidential race. You ask about Georgia. I'm always concerned because of the turnout that we saw with the Democrats, in the midterm election and especially the governor's race. I do not believe for a minute that Georgia will go Democrat in the presidential, campaign. But I think it's much closer than it should be. And a lot of it has to do with, the suburban voters around Atlanta. And, you look at some of these counties during that midterm election, it was a little shocking on how some of the women voters who generally vote Republican were going Democrat this time around. So, yeah, it could be closer, but I wouldn't give Georgia to the Democrats yet.
Well, and Georgia has about a 30% African-American population. Typically, about 92% of the black vote will go into the Democratic Party column. If President Trump, as we've seen some indications, both in terms of the pro-life issue, in terms of economic growth, if he can get 15% instead of 8-10% of the African-American vote, that moves a Georgia more firmly into his column. Again, you got to cater to those suburban white votes as well. But that African-American vote in places like Ohio and Pennsylvania and Michigan and others, if Trump can get just a little more, it becomes even harder for Democrats to carry those battleground states. We'll talk more about it in a moment. This is the Battleground State Report. Go to battlegroundstatenews.com, battlegroundstatenews.com, to see some of the stories that we're talking about today. And who's in, who's out? Mike Bloomberg decided not to run. Hillary Clinton said she wasn't, but now she's backtracking. We'll see what she's going to do, and we'll talk about it in a moment.
A flip-flop. I'm shocked. I'm shocked.
And now, back to the Battleground State Report.
Welcome back in, Steve Gill, Michael Patrick Leahy, Doug Kellett with you, talking through the presidential politics and beyond as we look towards 2020, particularly in the battleground states. BattlegroundStateNews.com on the web. Battleground State News on Facebook as well, if you'd like to check out some of the stories that we post and some of the comments that are available for you to share your views there as well. Some of the folks that are getting in have already gotten out. I mean, Sherrod Brown was talking about running, as Michael mentioned in the last segment. He's already decided to opt out. You're seeing some kind of stumble out of the blocks. And yes, I'm talking about you, Elizabeth Pocahontas Warren. others like Kamala Harris not having a great kickoff, although she's going to count on her, charisma and California voter base, although they're moving, I guess, California up in the primary process to try and give her a head start with some delegates there. But as you look at who's in, who's out, Michael Bloomberg deciding not to run. So I guess the billionaire that's still looking at it is Schwartz, the CEO of
Schultz. The Starbucks guy.
Yeah, the coffee
New York.
Guy.
Yeah.
But he's looking at running as an independent. So is there going to be a big dollar guy get in in the Democrat primary?
Schultz couldn't win the Democratic primary because he's not left-wing enough. So.
Why do you think Bloomberg got out of it? I thought he was almost going to be a sure thing, right? He just didn't want to spend the money?
No, I'll tell you why.
Thinks he can't beat Trump and maybe that's it or what?
He's a billionaire, and a billionaire is mean and evil, even if they're left-wingers.
He wants to control. Control us, right? How much soda we drink and everything. Isn't that perfect?
Well, here's the other problem Michael Bloomberg has. He's not as bad as Hillary Clinton. He's not as bad as Elizabeth Warren. But he's just not likable. I mean,
those are positives.
he's
not as bad as. Yeah.
But look, he would. I think if you were in business, he would probably be a good business partner because he knows how to make money. But in politics, people have to like you, and I don't think people really like Michael Bloomberg.
And how do you?
Yeah, he's not likable. You're right about that. I mean, it's another one of those that. Just sort of comes across and it's like, and maybe the billionaire thing doesn't work, right, in the Democrat Party, perhaps?
I think it works if you've got the right character and personality and force of personality. I mean, Trump didn't win because he was a billionaire. He won because he'd been on television on Apprentice forever. Yeah. People felt like they knew him. He'd been a presence in their home. He started with name recognition bigger than anybody else could buy. And his style was so disruptive that nobody could compete with that.
Yeah.
You know, a Bloomberg wouldn't have that kind of disruptive style. He doesn't have anything that sets him apart from the Democratic Party pack. Frankly, I mean, if Bernie Sanders was a billionaire and 30 years younger, then he would be the kind. I mean, he's got charisma in a bizarre, twisted professor sort of way.
Wait, in a lunatic left-wing, Bernie, we must have communism, Sanders way.
I still think he did a great job in Back to the Future. I keep saying that, but he played a great role there. But you're right. I mean, there is a let me stop and see what Crazy Bernie is saying sort of element there, right? I mean, every time he's on television, turn it up, let's see what he's saying here. And he's giving away freebies everywhere. Yesterday it's free tuition, four-year college now for students. It's Medicare for everyone. I don't know if that, I don't know how, don't worry about paying for it, right? But, I mean, people who want free stuff, I mean, he's your guy.
And, again, when you look at why job growth may slow, when they start looking at the cast of Socialism is Good, looking at what's happening in Venezuela and what others want to bring to the U.S. that we've seen fail in Venezuela, if I'm a business owner, I'm going, hey, wait a minute, one of these nitwits might become president.
Yeah. Let's follow up on the Venezuela issue. The rise of the socialist dictators, or the continued power and control of the socialist dictator Maduro in Venezuela, the utter collapse of that country economically, the rise of poverty, the struggles there are absolutely an example of what happens when you have socialism in a country. And yet, the Democrats are not strongly coming out in opposition to the Maduro regime, the socialists. Bernie Sanders won't condemn him. You know who the leader in the country is? It's obviously Donald Trump, very strongly against the socialist dictatorship. And that has an electoral impact in Florida, where you have a lot of a heavy Cuban population and a growing Hispanic population from Puerto Rico and Mexico in Florida, and so, and Venezuelans as well. The stance of every Democrat on Venezuela is not helping at all in the Florida race for them, and I think it's moving Florida more and more into the Republican column. Would you agree, Steve? Or?
Yeah, and I think when you look at the approval ratings that you're seeing for Governor DeSantis, who narrowly won in Florida and yet is now, with some of the polling in Florida, showing in that 50, 60, 65% approval range, the popularity of that governor and a Rick Scott as their senator, both who won despite all the efforts of the Democratic Party to not only win the race but steal the race, I think moves to the Republicans in Florida make it, like Ohio, perhaps easier for Republicans to take. Again, we're still a long way from the Democrats having their nominee, but I think that those states are moving more into the electoral column of the Republicans. I would agree with Doug that the Georgia issue bothers me, but you've got 30% of the vote in Georgia is African American. That has a big impact on the way that vote is carried. Same thing to some extent with North Carolina. There's a large African American population, and you have all the colleges and universities that have imported liberals from other places to North Carolina. And yet, as they see what Democrats do when they take power, as we're seeing with a Democrat governor in North Carolina, as you're seeing with a Democrat governor in Michigan now, who's pushing a 45-cent a gallon gas tax increase.
Unbelievable.
45 cent a gallon.
Unbelievable.
So, wow. So you're seeing what Democrats do when they get in power, which, again, when you add the chaos we're seeing out of Washington with the policy disasters they're promoting, at some point, hopefully, the American people wake up and go, ho, 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 not for me, thank you.
Well, and it's as you guys are always pointing out, as far as the presidential election next time, it depends on who Donald Trump is running against, right? And right now, I mean, if it's just sort of a generic Democrat, he might lose. But when you get to the specifics about who's going to run, it's that then everything becomes much more clear, I think. And in Florida, yeah, you know, I'm with you. I think it should fall in the Republican category, but we've seen it so close, so long
yes.
now. Can't take it for granted. Huh?
Hanging chads and Broward County doing crazy things with
ballots.
Well,
even the Trump, yeah, with Trump won, it was still a little nail-biting yeah. there for a long time, but, you know.
We're likely to see that kind of nail-biting in 2020 in several of these battleground states. Also, you know, quite possibly, I've talked about this before, California will again go heavily for the Democratic candidate, whoever it is. We may see another situation where the Democrat wins the popular vote but loses yeah. the Electoral College. But I'll tell you, it's very fluid in this sense. The Democrats are so far left. And
you're right. And Michael, I wanted to add something to yeah. what you're saying, because like, for example, in Colorado, a Republican in Colorado is not the same kind of Republican that as far as conservatism as, say, Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee.
Yeah.
As I learned when I kind of went out there. Same thing, you know, like a Republican in the Research Triangle in North Carolina is not the same again as maybe a conservative in Tennessee. Same thing with Florida. Well, we see that with the libs. A liberal in Florida may not be quite as far left as one in California or in New York State or something like, or New York City. So, you know, there are some degrees of this, and so if they appoint some real far lefty, you know, as their nominee, maybe the Democrats in those states that are not, you know, they're not quite there yet. Maybe they don't vote for the Democrat candidate.
Well, and in the fast pace of news, it's hard to tell what news today will carry any weight, you know, 12, 16, 18 months from now. But this anti-Semitism that is being embraced by the left, by the Democrats' refusal to even condemn Ilhan Omar, this radical Islamist approach that is being embraced while denouncing Jews and mistreating Jews and anti-Semitic behavior and rhetoric is being embraced, that could have an impact in Florida. Again, you've got a large Jewish population in Florida. Again, Donald Trump doesn't have to win an overwhelming number. You nibble at the edges. You get 6% more of the black vote. You get 5% more of the Hispanic vote. You get 4% more of the Jewish vote. You get 5% more of the Catholic vote because of the issues on abortion. It gets kind of hard to beat Donald Trump. 615-737. Oh, you can't even call in today. Give me your phone number. You can email.
Yes.
And you can go to our Facebook page and share your thoughts. Battleground State News on Facebook, battlegroundstatenews.com, Battleground State Report here on the web. So, you know, you can share
just
your
give
thoughts
your home
in
number.
Other ways.
They'll talk
soon,
to you.
But
I'll give them your home
but
number.
But soon,
though.
I think, as the Battleground State Report grows, people may be able to call in.
We'll work on that. Hey, we'll be right back with more as we look at how the battleground states affect 2020 election. And as you dive down in some of these demographic groups, that's where the real fight may be fought. We'll talk more about it in a moment.
It's the Battleground State Report with Steve Gill, Michael Patrick Leahy, and Doug Kellett.
Welcome back in. This is the Battleground State Report. Go to battlegroundstatenews.com on the web, Battleground State News on Facebook. You'll find some of the stories that we're talking about. Just before the break, Doug was talking a little bit about Colorado and another one of those battleground states. The Democrats carried it fairly handily. It is a tough state in some ways for Republicans, should be a good state. As Doug mentioned, the Republicans there are not as conservative as perhaps you have in the Deep South and some of the other red states. But what you do have is a big split in Colorado where you've got the blue portions in places like Boulder are further left. I mean, they're loving them some Ocasio-Cortez and some socialism in that area.
Yeah.
And then you've got, you know, Colorado Springs with large military population. You've got a lot of, you know, faith-based organizations, you know, that are there. James Dobson's group are there. You have big divides in Colorado of very conservative Christian red and very liberal socialist blue, and it has combined to make it a purple state. Well, now you have this very liberal extremist governor, Polis, who is the governor, who is pushing through with the narrow margins that Democrats have in the state House and state Senate, to abandon the Electoral College for Colorado. They want to make sure that Colorado's electoral votes go to whatever the national vote does, basically disempowering Colorado voters so that, you know, it doesn't matter who you vote for president in Colorado, the national vote totals in California, New York are going to dictate where our votes go. And that's getting some pushback in Colorado. There are recall elections in Colorado. They have a recall process. And as soon as this passes, and Polis is holding up signing it because he knows as soon as he signs it, the recall petition process will start. You'll likely see special elections being held. And Republicans could pick up a net gain of 2 seats if they can, you know, shift 2 seats in the state Senate. All of a sudden, they control the state Senate. They would have to pick up about 7 net gain of House seats. But Democrats got a rush of House seats in the off-year election after Trump got elected, you know, by running people that sounded rational, and now they've been able to show themselves. And I think that in Colorado, where Democrats are saying, our votes won't matter, I think you could get some pushback there, and that could move Colorado into the Trump column in 2020.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, they reached too far. The Democrats did, Diane DeGette and some others, when they went with gun control years ago, and people voted the Republicans back in the legislature and governor's office and that kind of thing. So that could exactly, you know, something like that could happen again for sure.
Yeah, the other interesting aspect of that, I think Colorado is like the 13th state to pass such a law. Now, the Constitution does say that the electors from each state will be determined in a method determined by the state legislature. Well, that's in the Constitution. But the argument that that's constitutional, I think, is a little bit squishy, because what they're doing is they are giving away the state's electoral college votes to the national vote, at which I think there's going to be a good constitutional challenge against that. You're the attorney, Steve. How well would such a constitutional challenge fare?
Yeah, the constitutional challenge is going to be delayed. It's going to take a while. I think the political opportunity to say, why are Democrats giving away our right of vote? You know, I mean, if I'm an editorial cartoonist, I'm having New York and California pulling the puppet strings of
like
Colorado,
yeah.
Of, you know, we they're the boss of us, you know, that our votes don't matter.
Well, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez already thinks she's the boss of everybody.
She's the boss. The boss.
Well, and speaking of her, you've also got states where you may see a lower Democratic Party vote. I think Virginia, we'll talk about that in just a moment, but even in New York, where Ocasio-Cortez and this socialist extremism cost them 25,000 jobs, you know, outside of New York City, Donald Trump only lost New York to Hillary Clinton. A state where she had been U.S. Senator, he only lost it by about 780 votes outside of New York City. Well, when you have Ocasio-Cortez and these other nitwits that are costing New Yorkers jobs in New York City, it may not shift New York into the Republican column. It probably won't, but it may leave people at home. It may cause people not to vote with as much intensity. It may change the dynamic there. And then when you look in Virginia, where you've got a racist governor, you've got a lieutenant governor, African-American, who's accused, at least credibly, by 2 different women of rape. You've got an attorney general who
all
performed
Democrats.
In blackface. All Democrats. And in a state that saw a big push towards Democrats gaining like 14, 15 seats in the state House just a couple of years ago, that gave them within 1 vote of controlling the state House. I think you may see, and they have their elections this year, a pendulum swing back. If Republicans gain seats in the state House, expand their 2-seat margin in the state Senate just by a couple of seats, that changes the platform in Virginia. And if African-American voters in Virginia are disaffected because, okay, you got a racist in 2 of the 3 top spots, you're coming after the black guy in the second spot, forcing him to resign,
right,
and you're killing black babies with infanticide, if just a small portion of the black vote moves to Trump, if just a small portion of the black vote stays home, Virginia moves into play.
Yeah, what do you think is more important, too? Is it holding on to the Senate this next time around, winning the presidency again? Where do you think the real battleground is? I mean, any chance of getting the House back for Republicans in the next go-round? I mean, I know Michael looked at all these kind of demographics and who's up, you know, for re-election, that kind of thing. I mean, is it the Democrats win the House, Republicans hold on to the Senate kind of thing, or what?
Yes.
Oh, that was really. Let me go back and check my question here.
So I have a different view.
I think it's absolutely critical. Yeah. I mean, I think the House does have a chance to swing back. You had the Democrats carry a lot of seats. They carried 5 seats in Orange County, California. There's no reason they should have carried those. Republicans were asleep at the switch.
Ballot harvesting going on there.
Yeah, the theft. And again, that's where Republicans need to start now, pulling together the lawyers to make sure that the elections are fair and honest and accurate. And then you had South Carolina, where Republicans lost a seat that Mark Sanford had held. Yet Trump carried it by 20 points. They had a woman who was injured in a car wreck, and they lost that one. I mean, incompetence of candidates and campaigns.
And the campaign didn't do
you can swing there. Seats back, but if the Democrats keep the House, gain the Senate, and get the White House, I think that America will not be able to recover ever. We lose our country in 2020 if the Democrats take control.
That's what I was asking, Steve, with it so narrow in the Senate. I mean, and there was that, 35-40 vote margin in the House here. Is it more likely the Democrats, gain complete control of the, of Congress this next time? And that
My view on this is that the Senate is more at risk because it's, 53-47 right now.
And you've got more Republicans having to defend. You've got retirements.
I think there's 33, 34 seats up, but 22 of them, I think, are Republican. I'm not sure the exact number. And only 11 are Democrats. So we're defending more the Republicans are.
And there's some pickup opportunities. Yeah. Doug Jones in Alabama,
for
example.
Probably pick that up, but it'll be hard fought.
But you got Susan Collins in Maine you're having to defend.
And she's gonna have trouble because she's not quite liberal enough, even though—
Arizona will be a battle.
We would consider her more of an establishment, kind of quasi-Republican. But in Maine, that's politically— she's been successful, but she will be challenged on the left.
Pat Roberts, who's 180 years old in Kansas, is retiring, so you're going to have an open seat there.
Yeah.
And Democrats picked up the governorship in Kansas.
In Colorado? Yes, they did. Yes, they did. And in Colorado, Cory Gardner's up, and he's kind of a, mainstream liberal slash establishment Republican. And yet he's going to be targeted. He's going to have a tough race in Colorado. It's possible that the Democrats could pick up the Senate. I actually think it's more likely that the Republicans could pick up the House than the Democrats pick up the Senate, just because of the fact you're going to have a greater turnout.
You flip 20 seats.
Yeah, you flip 20 seats, and you're going to have and many of those were very marginal on the Democrats.
And we've
side.
Seen the Democrats with Ocasio-Cortez and Ilhan Omar.
Yeah,
that's
crazy.
That's their brand.
But
I mean, it makes the Maxine Waters look reasonable.
But which is crazy. But I think back to your question, Doug.
Whoa.
Of those, the most important thing is to win the presidency, because there's great power there. There's great ability to limit the expansive deep state, the administrative state. But I will tell you that it's entirely possible, it's early to tell you, that we could lose all three, and in which case you're going to have—
America's doomed.
Well, I'm not sure if it's doomed, but it's going to be the way conservatives and constitutionalists fight back, if that were to happen, is going to be going to require great courage and great energy and great leadership. Leadership, other than Trump, is what's missing.
The first thing they do if the Democrats take the Senate is do away with the filibuster. And 51 votes passes anything and everything. They'll pass it in the House. They'll pass it in the Senate with a narrow majority. They'll all vote lockstep, just like they do all the time.
Yes, absolutely.
A Democrat president will sign it. It will cause irreversible damage to this country for generations to come.
I can't disagree
with
that.
If I had to bet today, though, and I was betting with Doug's money, I'd say Trump wins, Republicans keep the Senate, and narrow the gap in the House. That'd be the Steve Gill
bet. That's a good bet. That's a very good bet, Steve.
We'll be right back. This is the Battleground State Report, battlegroundstatenews.com, and we'll be back with a final segment in just a moment.
You're listening to the Battleground State Report.
And welcome back in. This is the Battleground State Report. Appreciate you joining us on the weekends. And spread the word. Share the word with your friends. And go to our Facebook page, Battleground State News, and share and like that. And that's the way we grow this and draw more attention to what we're doing. And appreciate you doing that. We were talking a little bit about the brand of the Democratic Party, with the Ocasio-Cortezes and the Ilhan Omars and the rest of the cast of crazies and socialists that are driving that party further and further to the left. It's clear late in the week when the Democrats could not even vote a simple anti-Semitism resolution because the socialist leftist defending Ilhan Omar and her vile, despicable comments repeated multiple times, they couldn't even come together on that, with the Republicans being willing to overwhelmingly join them in their vote. But that Democrat socialist crazy base was blocking what Nancy Pelosi, as the speaker, intended to do. She actually walked out of a meeting with the Democratic caucus this week because they were not going along with what the rational, reasonable way of kind of political power would dictate. The Democrats have lost control of their caucus, and to their credit, for the most part, the Republicans are sitting back and letting them destroy themselves. As more people see what the Democrats are, whether it's pushing infanticide in Virginia, blackface in Virginia, 45-cent a gallon gas tax increase proposals in Michigan, as you see the pro-radical Islamist agenda of Rashid Tlaib and Ilhan Omar as they start up more investigations of President Trump and move to impeachment of President Trump, I just don't see this winning votes in the battleground states.
No, I think you're right. And, the Democrats have a position here, Steve, where they could overreach, you know, with these investigations for sure, because the president's right in one thing. And I was debating somebody about this the other day. He calls it presidential harassment. Yeah, some of it's legit, perhaps, but a lot of it is harassment. And because that's what they want to do. They want to just keep sort of dragging this out, dragging, you know, whatever they can, and get it on television and such. But it could work against them. You know, we're already sort of in a election season here. People may get tired of that.
I think it's exactly right. And, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is so lunatic. She's entertaining.
But she's entertaining, yes.
Yes, yes. And you say, what crazy thing is she going to do? But the interesting part of the dynamic there is all of the senior leadership in the Democratic Party. You saw the Green New Deal press conference. It was these old white guys, basically, surrounding her, all looking like they needed a nursing home. Democratic leadership were there, and this 29-year-old.
Wait a minute, old white guys. I don't like the way this conversation is going, sir.
Photogenic, but crazy leftist is there, just babbling on, and it's just one stupid statement after another, and the old Democratic leadership is yes, all indicating just how insipid and lacking in any intellectual character the Democratic leadership is.
But look at some of the defense for Ilhan Omar's anti-Semitic comments. Well, she's not been here very long. She's not very bright. She's pretty stupid. She doesn't understand the import of her words. You know, if a Republican stood in the well of the House and used the N-word, do you think they'd say, well, you know, he's just been here for 3 months. He's in the freshman class. He didn't really understand the hurtful tone of using the N-word. I mean, their defense is even stupider than her comments. And then you add Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Just this week, on one bill, she voted yes, then voted no, then shifted her vote to present, then came back to yes on one vote. She really is not bright. And we've also now got this story that actually ties to Tennessee in Knoxville, where during the campaign, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and her team were operating this scam out of Knoxville with about 16 or 17 congressional campaigns being operated with corporate entities, a PAC, the campaigns all operating out of the same office, where they had done a casting call to recruit candidates to run against Democrat incumbents. They recruited about 16 or 17 of them. They didn't think they were going to win.
Yeah.
The only one who won was Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in a district where only 25,000 people voted. She won 15-10 against an incumbent who didn't do anything because he thought he had no chance of losing, and they didn't think she would win. They knew that nobody pulls back the covers to look at the numbers of a losing campaign. She wins. That's what's caused Phil Kirpin and his group to look into the financing of all these campaigns. If she had lost, nobody would have uncovered this. And now there are chances of actual criminal charges against her, her chief of staff, her communications director, others that were involved in this scheme. the bean counters are going to get Ocasio-Cortez.
I think
some
so.
Of this is coming from the Democrats who want to end her.
Yeah, well, because she's taken the party so far to the left that, you know, mainstream America, is they're going to look at whatever these nutcase policies are, you know, get rid of all airplanes, get rid of all cows.
don't eat meat unless it's
don't
me.
Don't eat meat. Yeah, yeah. So they're going to look at that, and they're going to look at Donald Trump, who orders, you know, Big Macs and Chick-fil-A for the football teams that come in. They're going to say, you know, he may be unusual, but he's not a crazy person.
By the way, the media hysteria this week over North Dakota State Bisons visiting the White House, they won a division lower than Clemson that was at the White House a few months ago. The president served up fast food to them. He did the same thing with the North Dakota State University Bisons with Chick-fil-A. Mm-hmm. I love that part.
Love Chick-fil-A.
And McDonald's. The kids aren't complaining. They're loving
it.
They're getting
it.
To come to the White House. What's missing from this is, well, what if presidents before served? In 1998, when the Lady Vol basketball team and the University of Kentucky basketball team visited the White House, Senator Bill Frist, who was then U.S. Senator from Tennessee, hosted them at a reception afterwards and fed them. The White House didn't feed them.
Yeah.
Just a few years ago, in 2010, when basketball champions visited the White House, they didn't get served any meal. When they were going home, the University of Alabama, Doug would appreciate this, the University of Alabama flying home after their visit got box lunches that the university paid for that were Chick-fil-A, by the way. Obama didn't serve them anything. You didn't see the media hysteria over that. At least President Trump is feeding them on his own dime.
Now, I just have to say one thing about that. Fortunately, Michelle Obama didn't serve them kale.
Yeah. It'd still be there. And, you know,
the Alabama offensive line would have been going, is this like garnish? What's it supposed to go on top of?
They'd have no idea what that is. We've been served grass. I think, this whole, you know, sort of argument or whatever that's been made about President Trump doing the fast food thing, I think he's kind of started a tradition. You know, I think you're right about that. I mean, of course, Chick-fil-A, I guess the left goes crazy about it for political reasons. But, I think you give them the food they like.
If the Democrats win the White House, it'll be Ben and Jerry's ice cream, kale, and Starbucks coffee.
Starbucks coffee.
Yeah. Although, I don't know, he may not be left-wing enough for the Democrats. They're kind of upset with him. I do want to say,
they're boycotting his coffee right now. That's right, yeah.
I do want to say something about Chick-fil-A. What a great company.
Awesome milkshakes.
Great food. delicious sandwiches.
And awesome milkshakes.
And I have never been to a Chick-fil-A. By the way, they're not an advertiser with us, although we certainly would be delighted if they wanted to be. But just to say, I have never been to a Chick-fil-A where I have not had outstanding service by polite, happy, smiling people. I mean, how do you do that across the board? Throughout the country. I mean, it's just a fantastic
because they get to sample the amazing milkshake. I'd be happy if I was working there too and I got to eat milkshakes, you know, constantly.
Well, and they
the
have,
day.
You know, and the food is good, as you mentioned, but they have these good programs for the young people that work there. I mean, they help them, navigate their way through college and everything. And so they have all these kind of programs that they can benefit from as well. So people like working there too.
What I really like about them is they're closed on Sunday and they never open on Sunday unless there's a emergency. If there's a physical emergency,
tornado, hurricane,
a tornado, they will make the exception and open on Sunday and give free food to victims and first responders.
Yeah, if there's a snowstorm that traps people on an interstate, they'll go out and walk car to car giving people a sandwich.
Yeah, they did that outside Atlanta when they had the big ice storm here a few years ago, you know. But you're right. I mean, it always seems like the time you really want Chick-fil-A is on Sunday, but then you understand
but
they're closed.
That's because when you drive past, you realize, hey, there's no line at Chick-fil-A. And it's like, oh,
but, you know, I want to just talk a little bit about this and the change in our country, and that's the following. You've seen largely Fortune 500 companies have been moving to the left, been influenced by the social justice warriors, and now you have to be politically correct even in the Fortune 500 companies. What is delightful to me about Chick-fil-A, which they may be pretty close to a Fortune 500 company by now, but one of the very few that are conservative and, you know, are based upon. They run their business on Christian principles. They don't just go out and preach political correctness and social justice. If there is a need in the community, they put their money where their mouth is, and they help out with their goods and services. And that, when you want to talk about corporate engagement, to me, that's real corporate engagement.
Yeah, and I totally agree. I mean, and you're right. It's so often now that businesses, you know, they give so much money to a lot of these leftist causes. Steve, part of what they have to do, right, is they have to kind of dole the money around. Otherwise, they face all kinds of problems as a result, don't they?
Well, again, it's the shakedown effect that we've seen.
I mean,
Jesse
yeah.
Jackson mastered it. If you don't give to me, we'll have, protest out calling you a racist. So you see this happen, and corporate America has moved to the left to try and prevent essentially this sort of blackmail operation from taking place. And that's why you have companies and entities that you think would be strong moral businesses and groups. I mean, like the Girl Scouts are promoting and actively engaged with Planned Parenthood. Why are the Girl Scouts, I mean, I love their cookies, but I can't stomach their cookies when they're participating with Planned Parenthood to kill unborn babies.
We don't have enough time to go into this, but one of the themes that I have is the utter collapse of institutions in America. You see it all over public education, even to some extent Fortune 500 companies being so politically correct. But now you have the Girl Scouts aligning with Planned Parenthood, and now the Boy Scouts are the Girl Scouts as well. So now Boy Scouts must have girls in them. And they're, now it'll be the transgender Scouts, Doug. What do you think?
I don't know. I don't even know how to even, get into the conversation any longer about all this.
When I was a kid, me and my buddies would have loved to have gone camping with girls.
Yeah, I was going to say, there was a time, probably, you're right, we would be promoting that, right? But it's gotten to the point now they're going to eventually shut down what has been really, great organizations for young people to get involved in, do community service, learn, some values and such. And people are going to decide, or parents are, I don't want to send my kids, have them involved in all this.
By the way, we were talking about Ilhan Omar earlier. Proclaiming Justice to the Nations, PJTN.org, has a petition up to try and force her resignation. If you'll go to PJTN.org, you can find their petition. The Democrats won't even remove her from the Foreign Affairs Committee, so the likelihood anybody's going to remove her from Congress, other than the voters maybe a year or so from now, is difficult. But keeping the spotlight on who these people are, what they're advocating, what they're doing, is important. And if you'll go to PJTN.org, you can sign their petition and help keep the heat on. Tennessee is going to be a hot place this week. You can go to Battleground State News. We've got a lot of stories coming out of Tennessee, like the teaching anti-white stuff in our schools.
Oh,
we want to go there.
And Maine as well.
Maine doing the same thing.
Check out battlegroundstatenews.com and you can see all those stories.
We'll be back next week. You have a great week.